Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hey, this is going to be a fantastic show, man. First up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast CEO with Digital Resolve, Mr. Bill Kalpin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Bill, before we get too far into things, can you tell us a little bit about Digital Resolve? How are you serving folks?
Digital Resolve was founded about 15 years ago to help address the growing threat of online cybercrime and fraud. Initially focused on financial institutions, we help protect legitimate access to financial information and personal information, and we do it in a way that preserves the user experience. So the good guys get in easily, and the cyber criminals have a much tougher time, hopefully can't get in at all. So
now cybersecurity is becoming such a big thing, it has its own month now. How did that happen?
It has. The Department of Homeland Security has the overall responsibility for global cyber security. And so October kicks off what has been a number of annual events now, and basically focused on uniting government and the public in battling cybercrime. It's a joint effort because it needs a joint solution. Technologies are great. People are great. But you can't have a technology that stops everything. People can't stop it on their own. So that combination is really a key to helping to battle cybercrime. And it's about a $2 trillion expense estimated by the Pentagon. So we're not going to stop it. We're not going to win the war. But working together, I think we can improve things quite a bit.
Are we winning?
I think we're winning more than we used to, but there are a lot of smart people out there that are figuring out ways to attack consumers and attack businesses. There was a day when the cyber criminals were after money. They were focused on banks. They were focused on compromising personal accounts and brokerage accounts. Now they've discovered that there's a dark web market for personal information. So we've all read about very publicized breaches of major companies housing lots of personal information. So that's become an economy in itself. And it's gone from being the old speculation was it was a teenager in the garage with too much time on their hands and curiosity and skill. Now it's organized crime and actually state-sponsored activities as well. So,
and the work that they're doing is kind of like business people. They're going into businesses with whiteboards and they're planning out how to attack a vulnerable company.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have good marketing departments because you can't find out too much about them.
Well, I'm sure their advertising budget's not very high, but I'm sure their talent recruiting budget's pretty high.
Yeah, they are absolutely organized business, and you can go on the dark web and buy all sorts of tools. You can buy data, but you can also buy the exploit tools to help you breach companies or find ways into things. And it's a very sophisticated business these days.
Now, if these larger firms that are well-known and name brand firms are getting hacked, how does the little guy stand a chance?
Well, that's a great point. There was a time when, as I said, banks were the targets, and especially the big banks. As the big banks shored up their defenses, the cybercrime moved down to different levels. And now everyone is a target. Small businesses, it doesn't matter what you do. If you house employee information, if you house customer information, then you're a legitimate target to be attacked. And the average cost, if a credential compromise attack, often called phishing, we could talk about that later if we want. If that's successful, a small business can spend $1.6 million to resolve that. So it's a problem for everybody. It's a problem for individuals too. But the businesses run reputational risk as well as financial risk.
So, is there any low hanging fruit a business can do to kind of shore up some kind of simple weaknesses?
Absolutely. They could certainly deploy Digital Resolve technology, but prior to that, they could train their employees. Many of the well-publicized breaches occurred because an individual gave up their user ID and password. And passwords have always been suspect in terms of not being adequate to really protect sensitive information. So an phishing attack is basically a well-crafted email that is intended to lure an employee or a consumer into giving up personal information like a user ID and password. So there are technologies that can run behind the scenes. So when you and I enter our ID and password, there's a behavioral check behind the scenes that looks to see if that's typical of how that user looks in their online profile. If it's suspicious, we can also offer a one-time password, send a PIN to a phone, ask a personal question. So lots of ways to stop it, but it does start with education. Employees and consumers need to be aware that if you get an email that looks suspicious, it's asking for personal information, best not to respond to it.
So it's like if everybody on our team right now, Lee, across 8 studios, if they got an email that said, hey, it's time for your annual bonus. We've had a great year. Just send us your login and password for the website so that we can tie that to your compensation. I mean, I bet there's some people that would answer that and do that. That happens, right?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes. Yeah.
And, God almighty.
Yeah. Well, I'll take it up a notch, and I'm sure you've seen this as well. I saw recently that now with this kind of digital faking, you can get someone's voice and they can leave a voicemail that says that exact same thing. And how many people?
And it would sound just like you. With as much audio as we have on file, it's probably easy to do it for us, right?
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, you just gave the cyber crooks a great idea. So change your payroll passwords quickly. So, yeah, excellent point. I mean, even really bright people can be lured into it. And there was a time when the phishing emails were not grammatically correct. They didn't have great graphics. Now they're really good, and they can go on LinkedIn and figure out that you two work together. So they may send an email from you to you, and that's plausible. And he's asking to borrow money again. You think, okay, that's a normal sort of thing. So just all sorts of creative processes now that make it much harder to tell the bad emails. So
now what are you supposed to do? Like if something seems amiss, like should I try to call him? Like, is that should be standard operating procedure? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, if it looks amiss, don't click. Don't give any information. Validate the source of the email or phone calls, which can also happen, and go back to the source in your own way. So use a phone number you know, use an email address you know. But yeah, basically, if it looks suspicious, delete it, or at least don't do anything with it until you find out if it's valid or not. So
now, what is the crooks are looking for? What in order? Like, is it? It used to be money, but now it's personal data. Or
it's still money. I mean, there's still a lot that goes on. Just about every day, you get an email that says, "If you're a customer of this bank, we've had an issue with your account. Please click here to reset your password. You'll be locked out, and your funds will be frozen." Something that usually gives you a terrifying reason not to respond. Mm-hmm. They're counting on that. So, the best thing to do is just to ignore those sorts of things. So,
but in today's world where the customer is expecting instant gratification in terms of they want the speed and response, and then the company's got to deliver that speed in concert with knowing that the person is really the person, like it just seems so difficult.
It is, and businesses want to deal online, and certainly that online activity has opened up a lot of opportunities for us in business and in communications. But we just have to be careful about it. And a business should never ask online for passwords or user IDs or personal information unless it's in the context of the transaction. Obviously, when you log into your bank account, you expect to give a user ID and password. You wouldn't normally be asked to give a social security number, and certainly not a full social security number. So those out of pattern communication should never happen with businesses, whether it's banks or online commerce, anything. So businesses need to be careful not to let their customers think that they're ever going to do that. Another thing that's very common is businesses send out emails with links, and links can easily be redirected to a fake site. So if the consumer clicks on it, thinking it's legitimate, they end up thinking they're at the legitimate site, and instead they're just someplace that is trying to house or trying to dupe them into giving up information. So, and as you said earlier, it is still about money, but if they can trick you into giving up your bank account information, that's certainly easy money. But the big money seems to be in getting access to personal information and then reselling that to multiple people on the dark web that will use it to create fictitious identities, fake credit cards, new accounts in your name. And that's the whole world of identity theft, which is a kind of a similar but but different topic and another really scary area.
So now talk about Digital Resolve. Who is your typical client? Are you dealing with enterprise level customers, or is your client the small to mid-sized businesses? Or
so they vary. We started out in the banks, so naturally the big banks, the regionals, but we have large top 10 North American banks all the way down to small banks and credit unions. More recently, over the last couple of years, as the fraud focus has shifted to the small and medium-sized businesses, we've stepped in to offer our solutions to that group. So just as I said, everybody is a target, everybody is a prospect, not just for Digital Resolve, but for any company in the industry. We are a great technology, but we're not able to stop everything. The right approach in security is a layered approach. So you have to look and find the right solutions, and you have to work with your partners to make sure that as new threats evolve, new attack vectors evolve, that you're providing the feedback to your security providers to help them adjust accordingly. So
now what's the typical point of entry? Is it they've had a breach of some kind and they're like, oh, we don't know what to do, so we got to call the Digital Resolve folks?
It can usually start even simpler than that. Many of our customers were the targets of phishing emails. One of our largest customers was one of the most phished banks in the country. And they knew that because customers were calling them saying, did you send this email? And they had a lot of people that gave up credentials that created compromise. Mm-hmm. Basically deployed our technology, and within 24 hours of deploying it, they had solved the problem. And within a matter of days, they were no longer phished at all. The bad guys have come back. They're always going to kind of refresh their prospect list as they go into their sales meetings. But but you can at least deter them. And cyber criminals are, I guess, like a lot of businesses, we like to go for the easy money. We like to go for the low-hanging fruit, as you called it. So if they can't get into your place, they're going to go to your neighbor. They're going to go to a business like you.
So they'll take that same strategy and then just deploy it with a different company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Tried and true business formula. And,
right.
Yeah. So
how did you get into this line of work? What is your backstory?
Well, I spent early years in technology with a company called Burroughs. Not around anymore.
I'm old enough to remember that.
Okay, well, that's back in the days, it was IBM and Burroughs, and then Burroughs merged with Sperry and became Unisys. Went from there into finance. So I worked with Citibank for a number of years. And when I moved to Atlanta, I was with Equifax. So a lot of involvement in personal information and security and protection and the sensitivity of financial transactions. And I was involved in a startup that was sold off, and Digital Envoy had a need for a CEO, so joined the company, and really we started the Digital Resolve business at about that time, 15 years ago. So
how does the whole sales and marketing thing work for something like this? My instincts are everybody wants to know more about it. Most of us feel like we ought to be doing something about it, and it seems like maybe it's a kind of a crowded marketplace, but maybe I'm reading that wrong. But how does that whole sales and marketing thing work for you guys?
Yeah, it is a really crowded marketplace. There are some really, really big companies. We're not among those. We're a good sized company, but compete with publicly traded companies that are off the charts in terms of size. We compete based on our responsiveness, our customer service, and our ability to turn on a dime when an attack happens or changes so that we can help our customers really in real time, on the fly, make a change that stops whatever it is they're dealing with at the time. I'm not saying we're the only company that can do that, but that is a big part of it. So one of the interesting things about our sales and marketing is we go to shows, we do advertise, but we never publicize who our customers are. We made the decision back a long time ago that if somebody knows you're using Digital Resolve, then you've got a target on your back, and they'll go to the website, they'll come to us and pretend to be a customer and look to find out what we're doing so they can use it. So in hindsight, we sometimes wish we hadn't been so smart about that, because it'd be much nicer if your big customers are out there telling everybody. But we believe it's very effective. And if I named off our customers, you'd recognize all of them. You've never seen any of them in the press for the breaches or security issues that a lot of companies have had. So very proud of that. And we justify our decision not to publicize their names based on that.
So but you meet them at the shows, is there a trade show where people like you all gather, or people that have this challenge all gather?
Yeah, the trade show industry around cybersecurity and fraud is probably as big as cybercrime itself. Lots of organizations that sponsor those, the government sponsors workshops and forums as well. So, and consulting companies. So yeah, there's no lack of opportunities to go and meet people that have the problem or are just being smart and looking to anticipate the next issue that they're going to deal with and find a solution to it before it actually hits.
And then you can have like a real conversation with some of these people. They're exploring a lot of alternatives. You're meeting them face to face. You're having a real conversation. And it sounds like you feel like you guys are more agile and nimble and might very well be able to respond to some of these needs more better.
We certainly,
some folks.
We certainly believe so. And it's actually an interesting conversation because back when we were talking with the big banks, we knew they were all having problems, but they'd agree to a 2-hour meeting and to hear everything we had to say. But when you said, well, what kind of problems are you having? Well, we're really not having any problems. So when you try to sell to somebody that won't acknowledge they even have the problem, you really have to kind of fish around to hit the spot where they suddenly sit upright in the chair and want to talk about something. So, but that's the nature of cybercrime, cybersecurity. You don't want to acknowledge the problem, but you're smart enough to know you still need to deal with it.
And so, I would imagine it's tricky in terms of like content marketing where you can't kind of do a lot of education about your secrets because all you're doing is tipping off the bad guys about how your approach is. So you have to be kind of ambiguous in general and then, but still build the trust with your customer to for them to believe that you know what you're doing and you have a solution.
Yeah, absolutely true. As I said, if the bad guys know that Bank X is using us, then they're going to become a prospect and try to figure things out.
Right.
So one of the things we do is we actually deploy our solution for an interested prospect as long as they're qualified and seem to be serious about buying something and will at least semi-acknowledge that they had a problem they need to address. So in doing that, we prove out the value proposition. We can stop the attacks immediately. We can tweak it on the fly to let them see how responsive we can be. So we think that's the best way to do it. We have solutions that we deploy, in the cloud. And, so that gives us a lot of flexibility in terms of deployment options. It's also a pretty light deployment. You don't have to have a huge staff to deploy a solution like ours. There are some that you need a room full of really smart engineers.
Department involved.
Yeah. So we kind of, our intelligence in that area is outsourced to our customers and they basically can practically flip a switch and have our solutions immediately available.
Now, any tips for individuals out there that are kind of worried about this? Is there anything they can do individually?
Yeah, again, that's back to the whole focus of the National Cybersecurity Month. As an individual, we have lots of passwords, and we like to keep it simple so that we can remember them. We like to write it down so we won't forget them. Those are horrible habits. Your passwords need to be very complex. They should never be written down. They should be changed about every 90 days.
Oh my.
Some say 60 days. Yeah, and that's a real memory test. So, it's just sometimes you don't, you know, big breaches that get publicized are only a fraction of what actually happens. There's an estimate that somewhere between 70 and 80% of breaches aren't yet discovered. So for everyone you read
ongoing.
About. Yes. And that means if your information was in that breach, you may not find out about it until one, the company finds out about it. And then they talk to their legal counsel and their marketing people.
It could
people,
be six months or a year from when it happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, so you have to assume that your information is compromised and changing passwords is a good routine. One of the most commonly used passwords, shamefully, is 1234. ABCD. If you need six digits, they go a couple of extra digits in the same direction. So if you're a cyber criminal, that's the really low hanging fruit that you go, oh my God, there's somebody still doing this and they need to pay for this. So I think that's a lot of it. And again, back to the emails. If you get an email that looks suspicious, ignore it, talk to whoever supposedly sent it, but don't do anything to even forward it can be damaging. And just be alert, be smart to what's going on and what seems too good to be true. If you get an email from a foreign prince that says he wants to give you lots of money, laugh, but it's still going on and there's still people that respond to them.
What about those kind of software password protecting, you know, where you have one password and then you just dump it all in that thing. Is that worth doing?
Those can be good. Yeah. Again, my personal nature is I worry about those because if they get breached, then everything's given up. But I'm sure those companies that do it, there are apps that do it, there's software that does it. In the business world, we offer a single sign-on solution that basically says you only need one password to get to the 90 million things you have to access in your company. That's a very effective way for a company to deal with encouraging strong, well-structured passwords that are hard to guess, that they can manage a process for requiring those to be changed regularly. So anything a consumer can do to kind of mimic that with Password Manager, or even following the same stream of what you do, but changing digits enough that each time you change it, it's going to be different enough. So, so basic steps, just kind of, it's what people have been saying about passwords for years. If it's too simple, if it's your birthday, if it's your maiden name, which used to be a very common way to get access to even the deepest financial information, it's probably going to be available on the web someplace. So. Or you may be showing it in your LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter account. Yeah, so that's another way they harvest information.
Well, congratulations. You've scared the heck out of me. I'm going to go change all my passwords and put lots of consonants and funny signs in them and all that, I guess, because that's not the case right now. Yeah.
So it's been a good visit then. We've saved one person.
So if somebody wants to learn more, if they have some challenges in their own cybersecurity, where can they go to learn more?
www.digitalresolve.com and contact us, and we will be back in touch with you quickly.
And then if I needed to get in the back end of your website, what's the password?
Password is 1234.